The news broke earlier this week that the last unaccounted for service member from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan had been freed in exchange for 5 Guantanamo Bay detainees.
The reaction to Bo Bergdahl's release has been swift and divisive, to say the least, and many are lining up to express their anger over the release of a POW who many consider to be a deserter. But it's also raising questions over the ethics of warfare and whether or not the country has an obligation to bring him back regardless of the circumstances.
Here with us now to talk more about this story is Alex Berenson. He's an author and former reporter for the New York Times, where he covered the wars. He recently wrote an op-ed for the paper, A Prisoner of War, But Not a Hero. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. It's good to talk to you.
So there's been a lot of talk, a lot of reaction to this news this week. But what was your first reaction when you heard the news that this deal had been struck, that he was being released?
Well, my first reaction, I should say, it was probably a bit of a, it may come as a bit of a surprise. I sort of immediately thought of the first novel that I wrote, because that features a guy who's been in Afghanistan for a really long time and comes home, and all my books have been around the same character. So I've been sort of following this from a slightly different take, because, you know, I have my own weirdly fictional character in mind. But very rapidly, I started to think more seriously about what the implications were, and the fact that this man, was essentially being lionized by the administration. Although they didn't call him a hero, but they did have this ceremony in the Rose Garden where his parents, showed up, and they seemed to expect a lot of praise for what had happened. And since I've been sort of paying attention to this, for a couple of years, and certainly since the Rolling Stone had a very long piece about it in 2012 and about the issues around his disappearance, I thought to myself, this is not going to go as they expect. Although I have to say the level of backlash and anger has surprised me a little bit.
What do you think leads to that anger? And actually, we probably need to take this into a few different pieces.
Yeah, I realize that was a really long.
Yeah, and go out for half an hour there. No, but the circumstances surrounding Bo Bergdahl's capture seem to be triggering a lot of the backlash here. What is it about this story that has made people so upset?
So start with that. The fact is that he seems to have walked off the base. If you believe his colleagues, and if you believe really what his parents, when they were talking publicly about this, which they're not so much now, but when they were talking to Rolling Stone about it, they received emails from him saying, "I'm not happy here. I'm not happy with what we're doing here. I'm leaving." And then he just disappeared. So from the beginning, his capture was shrouded in this mystery of how he was taken. He certainly was not taken in a firefight where his position was overrun, and you imagine a lone survivor type situation. It was nothing like that. He appears simply to have left. So that's why there are these allegations that he is a deserter.
Right, and this has not been established in a legal way, but the sense of fellow troops, veterans in particular, is that, call it that legally or not, he deserted. He deserted his platoon, his fellow soldiers.
Yes, and if you look at this at the plain language of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 85, which covers desertion, he appears to meet those grounds. Now, there's also being absent without leave. To be absent without leave, you have to intend to come back, and there's no indication that he intended to come back. So again, this is not for me to judge, and it certainly hasn't been proven in a court of law. And if he is ever charged, obviously he gets a court martial, and he gets to be tried by his peers. But the word, in public interviews that his fellow soldiers are making is desertion.
Well, the White House has been making the case that you leave no soldier behind. And I guess the question that arises is, does that apply no matter whether the soldier was captured, as you said, when his position was overrun, when she was caught up in a firefight, or if they went away from the Union, were AWOL, were maybe deserting?
Yes. I mean, in my opinion, I think that it's foolish to say, whatever the circumstances of his departure, that we shouldn't try to bring him back. He's not he's not subject to the Taliban's justice system. He's subject to the American and the American military justice system. And among other things, you don't want to try him in absentia. You want him, if ultimately he's found competent and if ultimately the Pentagon decides to bring charges, military prosecutors decide to bring charges, he's got to have the right to stand trial if he wants. And that means bringing him back. So for that reason, if for no other, he should be brought back. But I think there are other reasons, too. I think the idea of leaving an American in the hands of a force that's brutal, that's been known to decapitate prisoners, that we fought against for 15 years or 13 years, I think that the administration was correct to try to bring him home. The mistake that they made, in my opinion, is they wanted to get points for this rather than to recognize the murk around this. And instead, they stepped into this incredible mess where there's, this whole second set of issues, which is, should we have released these Taliban for him?
Right. That's what I wanted to move to next. Yeah.
Yes. And so I don't necessarily have a problem with that. The Taliban, unfortunately, like it or not, are going to be a part of the political structure in Afghanistan going forward. And the people who we released, we call them commanders. The Taliban would call them ministers. Okay. And to say that they're terrorists, it's sort of like Sinn Féin and the IRA. At some point, you have to recognize, or we have to recognize, that the Taliban speak for a part of the Afghan population, and we're going to have to deal with that. And we can't keep people who are essentially government officials locked up forever. So I don't have a problem with that either, although I understand why the Republicans are making hay with it. What Bergdahl clearly has become in the last 48 hours is he's become a way for us to talk about whether we won this war, whether we lost this war, whether it was worth the price we paid, all these questions that we haven't wanted to discuss in the last really 3 or 4 years, especially the last two as the war has been winding down, this man has become this incredible focus of.
And part of the negotiations that apparently Qatar, the nation, was helping with between the U.S. and Taliban, initially it may have been a wider negotiation about the Taliban's place in the future of Afghanistan. It got narrowed at some point to what are we going to exchange for this POW. Why do you think that got narrowed so much to just this one American?
Well, I think if I were in the Taliban's position, I wouldn't want to be having negotiations with the United States because we're leaving. And once you have no boots on the ground, once we have no boots on the ground, we don't get to tell the Taliban not to come back to Afghanistan unless we're going to be trying to pick them off with drones. And, that strategy, has limited effectiveness. It has some effectiveness, but has limited effectiveness. So I think the Taliban are content at this point to sort of wait us out. I think probably they saw a great opportunity here. As their commanders have been quoted as saying, this legitimizes us. The United States dealt with us. We released this man. We did make a video, of ourselves cutting his head off. We are suddenly a more legitimate political force to the whole world than we were before this happened. So I think that's why the Taliban did it. And I think the administration wanted to get him home, probably saw an opportunity here to score political points and didn't realize how badly this would blow up.
Well, and people are weighing the calculus there. On the one hand, the release of these five Taliban commanders, ministers, whatever they may be, the legitimization claimed by Taliban, all that in exchange for someone who may have deserted his unit. That whole combination, is that firestorm there making people particularly upset?
I think it is. And then on top of that, there's the story. I've been amazed because the story has actually gotten bigger each day since Saturday, which in this age of instant news cycles is unusual. But I think it's a combination of all these very important issues and then the mystique of the POW coming home, which comes out of Homeland, which frankly I'd like to think comes a tiny bit out of my novels. This idea of the guy who comes home and what did he know? And, has he been turned? What did he tell them? What can he tell us about them? So, Bo Bergdahl is a fascinating figure in and of himself, and he speaks to all these anxieties.
We're talking with author and former reporter Alex Berenson about the Bo Bergdahl release. It's been dominating the headlines this week, getting all kinds of reactions as the story moves along.
And we'd like to hear from you on this. What do you think about the prisoner swap? Was the U.S. right to negotiate for Bergdahl's release? And now that he's coming home, how do you think he should be received? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Alex Berenson about the release of Bo Bergdahl, who's the last remaining American POW in the war in Afghanistan, and we want to hear from you. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did the Obama administration do the right thing exchanging Taliban prisoners, five of them, for the release of Bo Bergdahl? Are you troubled by the stories you're hearing that he may have left his post? Does that mean we should have left him in Taliban hands, or should we still have work to secure his release? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send an email, talk@WPR.org. Alex, another thread that we hadn't picked up before the news there. We've heard suggestions that this could send the message to people in the Taliban, to Al-Qaeda affiliates around the world. Hey, capture American soldiers. You can use them as bargaining chips in the future. And in fact, someone with the Taliban, I believe, said exactly that. Is that a factor that's going to come back to haunt President Obama?
No, I think that's always been true. I mean, American soldiers, Americans in general, they're prized. They're valuable. They're valuable. You can sell them. I mean, you can sell captured Americans. You can trade them, certainly soldiers. And in some case, I don't know if we would trade, anyone at Guantanamo for an American civilian. But no, the idea that suddenly they've woken up and realized that Americans are valuable to have as hostages is ridiculous.
And you mentioned looking at this as a novelist, and it seems like there's this bizarre narrative going on and all sides in the United States scrambling to control how the story is told. What do you make of that, of their efforts to do that?
Well, it's the culture we live in. It's always been true, though. It's a story that gets people's attention, and the Republican Party certainly sees a chance to score points against the beaten down president with this. There's been reports that they've put media, reporters in touch with people in Bergdahl's platoon to, talk about him and talk negatively about him. As long as those soldiers are telling the truth and they're not being pressured, that's just part of the game. And I don't necessarily even have a problem with the fact that the GOP is doing that. Both sides are going to try to spin this to their advantage. Again, that's another reason probably that the administration erred so badly, because even if Bergdahl is a deserter and is eventually jailed, this has got to be a very difficult time for him. And who knows what he is or is not seeing and hearing right now, but he should have been put on a plane. This should have been announced in one paragraph, and it would be at least we'd still be having elements of this debate. But it would at least be a little bit less personal about him. And so I really do fault the administration for doing that.
We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got John on the line in Milwaukee. John, hi.
Hi. Very, very, very educated guest, I believe, there. I'd like to thank him. I got two questions. One is, are the Taliban, are they still, or they should they be treated as prisoners of war and not terrorists, or both, or they could be terrorists or a prisoner of war? Because, I mean, they were a recognized government of Afghanistan. We invaded them when they wouldn't turn over bin Laden unless we showed evidence that he was guilty of 9/11. So, but therefore, we invaded them. They're soldiers and they're people that are military. Shouldn't we treat them as prisoners of war and not lock them up like they do it at Guantanamo and other bases around the world?
Interesting point, John. So we're not negotiating with terrorists. In effect, these are prisoners of war. May not like the side that they fought on, but this is what happens during war, I guess he's saying, Alex.
Yeah, no, and that's a very, you know, that's a very good question. There are all kinds of people in Guantanamo, right? There are people who are clearly, you know, terrorists who worked for Al Qaeda, who are members of Al Qaeda. There are also Taliban, Afghans, who, you know, are they were, the Taliban was not the representative of the Afghan state for all those years, you know, all of the last 13 years. So it's pretty easy for us to say, you know, essentially they're stateless. We don't want to repatriate them. They'll just go back to the battlefield. When there is no more battlefield because we're not there anymore, and when and if the Taliban take their place, you know, in an Afghan government, I think it gets pretty hard to argue that, you know, senior members of that government should be imprisoned indefinitely. If we want to try them for crimes against the United States, you know, as we tried, you know, certain Nazis after World War II, we can do that. But at some point, you can't just say we're going to hold you as combatants when there's no more war. So it is a very complex question.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Ron on the line in Medford. Ron, hi.
Hi there. Hey, I'm 55 years old, and I remember back.
Ron just dropped off there. Sorry, Ron. I think he was calling to say that he didn't like the deal. We'll go now to Larry with us in Madison. Larry, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if the administration did any consulting with the Israelis who have faced these situations frequently, and what comparison our guest sees or similarities and differences between the situations that have been in the
news. I don't know if they did or did not consult with the Israelis. The Israelis, you know, just a couple of years ago, traded 1,000 prisoners for one prisoner of war. So the notion that, you know, the Israelis would never have done this, that's clearly inaccurate. And the fact is, we say, oh, we don't negotiate with terrorists. You know, President Reagan said that, and less than 3 years later, he was negotiating with Iran over Iran-Contra. We negotiate when it's in our interest to negotiate. It's that simple. It doesn't matter who's on the other side. And in this case, you know, we wanted to bring this guy home. So this notion of we never do X or we never do Y, you know, that's right up there with the check is in the mail as the biggest line around.
Larry, thanks a lot for bringing up that international perspective. We'll go now to Joe in Hillsboro. Joe, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I guess my immediate reaction, I have a daughter in the Peace Corps in West Africa, and contrary to what your guest is saying, is that was my concern, is that we have changed the dynamics in that although we may have privately done negotiations, not so much hostage exchanges, now it's very, very public. And that was one of my first concerns is, you know, some of the extremists there might think, here we go.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, I've got a public webpage and I sort of solicited information about this because a lot of my readers are military readers or, you know, U.S. government readers. And, you know, I try to have conversations with them. It's an interesting way to reach out and talk to people. And somebody who I think was former Peace Corps said he was happy about this. He was happy to know that the government would reach out, you know, and try and go to great lengths to get him back. Obviously there's a 99.99% chance that your daughter's stint in the Peace Corps will be untroubled, but I think you should be happy to know that the U.S. government will go to great lengths to get her back if something happens to her.
Joe, thanks for the call. Best of luck to your daughter. Alex, as we start to wrap up, Bo Bergdahl himself, the hero's return narrative is something that isn't happening. His hometown has canceled a welcome home ceremony, worried about security, worried about angry reactions to this. But what happens to him now? Do you think the military will be looking at possible charges of desertion?
I think they're going to have to. I think they have no choice but to do so. And by the way, it's possible he's simply mentally incompetent. It, you know, either now or even, you know, when he walked off. What he did was so close to suicidal that there is an argument to be made that even if he, you know, even if he thought he was deserting, that we just can't try him. But he's going to have a difficult integration process into the United States. It's going to be very, and everything that's happened in the last week has only made it harder for him. That, you know, again, when just to go back to these these novels. My one of the genesises was I had been in Iraq and I came home and I was struck by how difficult it was just for me as a civilian reporter to come back to the United States. And I imagine this character, John Wells, who'd been in Afghanistan, you know, for 5 or 6 years, trying to come home and getting used to the consumerism, to the culture of the United States again, and how hard that would be. And this man is going to have, you know, it's going to be 100 times as hard for him because there's all this controversy around him.
You mentioned the issues that we don't talk about on the list, probably the people still in Guantanamo. You mentioned, you know, what we left behind in Afghanistan. Do you hope that the issue of homecoming for veterans will be one of the issues we talk about when the dust settles from this Bo Bergdahl case?
You know, on some level, I'd say no, because this is so unique, and I think a lot of veterans don't want to be lumped in to his homecoming in any way.
Alex, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
That was Alex Berenson. He's an author, a former reporter for the New York Times. His recent op-ed for the paper was called A Prisoner of War, But Not a Hero.